Okay, final hour here with Dr. Roy Spencer, and we're going to take your phone calls with him. So you get ready, and we will too on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Roy Spencer. Roy, with everything that's been going on climate-wise, I mean, can it get worse?
Oh, yeah, I can get way worse. Of course, you know, what humans experience is changes in weather patterns. And some of the things we've seen this year, you know, have been unusual, but like I talk about in my first book, Climate Confusion, unusual weather is pretty usual. You know, you expect it. Let's take this derecho event, this severe thunderstorm, windstorm event that knocked out power to the D.C. area.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen those, you know, major events like that every few years for as long as we've kept record.
Sure.
It just is, this one just happened to hit a major populated area. In fact, one of the most severe events was back when it was unusually cool, like the 1970s was a period of very cool global average temperatures, and we had some very cold winters in North America and in the United States. That's back when we had one of the worst derecho events, and my point here is that, you know, it's not global warming that causes these things. Okay, these things just happen anyway. They're caused by temperature contrasts. You need not only the warm air in one area, you need the cold air in another area, and that's what leads to these major severe storm outbreaks that occur in the boundary between the cold and warm air masses.
Have you always, since you were a kid, been interested in the weather?
No, I really didn't get interested in it until I had to go live with my aunt and uncle in Michigan to the lee of Lake Superior.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm from Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, and I got interested in weather because of the lake effect snow they get up there, where you get cold air coming across the Great Lakes, and it causes it to snow. So that got my interest sparked in weather.
The Edmund Fitzgerald, remember that one?
Oh, yeah, I was there when it went down. I was at the National Weather Service office in the Sioux when that went down, and when the call came in that it had gone down. And one of the weather forecasters there was just getting off the phone with the shipping company down in Cleveland, Ohio, yelling that they got to start paying attention to the weather up there or something like that. It was a long time ago.
I was in Detroit, Roy, and sent a television crew up there to grab the story. When my news director screamed at me and said, there's no big story here. Why are you spending this kind of money? And I said, Dick, it's going to be a huge story. I think there's something wrong. And off we went, and we got the footage. CBS News used it. We were the only ones to have it there for a while. But what an incredible story. But that tells you, Roy, how weather can do incredible things.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You know, some people think that severe weather is getting worse because of global warming, and there's just no evidence for that, at least from our measurements. For instance, most people probably don't realize that this July that just ended was a record quiet month for tornadoes in the United States.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. I would not have known that.
Well, that's because the media doesn't like reporting on anything that doesn't support global warming theory.
Why are they that way?
Well,
I'm not. I want the truth, whatever it is. You
know? Well,
am I different?
George, I think you're a rare breed.
Well, yeah, I've got to tell you, though, there are a few topics that people get upset about, Roy, and this is one of them. I mean, if you talk to somebody on either side of the fence, not yourself included, they go nuts. They get ballistic.
Oh, yeah, and it's because there are so many more things than science involved in it. There's your worldview, your view of nature, how man interacts with nature, your view of the role of government in public life. You know, how much should public energy use be controlled by some central governing authority? You know, these are all things that people are passionate about, religion, politics, and they're all wrapped up in the global warming issue.
You know, I would wish that everybody would just get together and say, look, what we need to do is work out what we can do to survive when these huge climates change so drastically.
And that's something that John Christie, who I work with, and I have told Congress on a number of occasions, is, you know, we do need to be prepared for climate change events because we see in the historical record that they do occur, and sometimes they occur abruptly. And what we should be afraid of is Mother Nature causing climate change more than humans causing climate change.
It could wipe out states, without a doubt.
Yeah, anything's possible. We see evidence, you know, from proxies, you know, let's say sediments in the bottoms of lakes, that there were some really extreme events which have occurred, you know, hundreds of years ago, back before humans could have had anything to do with it, that if they happened today, you know, surely Jim Hansen would be, you know, he'd be having a heart attack in his...
As opposed to Jim Henson. Let's go to Veronica in Staten Island, New York, on the wild card line to get us started. Hey, Veronica, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks
morning.
For my call.
Sure thing.
There is a couple of things that are not really mentioned. I've never mentioned in the climate warming debate, and that's the military and government control of the weather. Weather warfare and things, you know, you've done some great shows on that. And, you know, HARP superheating the ionosphere. So two quick questions. One is how that sort of thinking factors into the death researcher conclusions. And then also there's some speculation amongst lay people that the tilt of the earth has changed a bit. I've noticed that the sun is rising in a noticeably different place, and there's a lot of talk that other people are noticing the same thing. So that could account for things like the glaciers and things in the northern hemisphere melting more so than in the southern hemisphere. I was wondering if the guest had any information or speculation on that as well.
Okay, go ahead, Roy.
Okay, well, Veronica, on the first point, I personally don't believe that there's any way, even if we wanted to, that we could control weather. There's just too much energy involved, and humans cannot create enough energy to have that kind of impact. Nature is jerking itself around all the time, and I don't believe that nature can really tell that humans are doing much of anything. But that's, you know, that's just my opinion based on what I know about how the atmosphere works. Now, on the second point, yeah, the tilt of the Earth is important to very long-term climate changes, like the ice ages on the time scale of, let's say, tens of thousands to 100,000 years or more. They do know that the change of there is a change in the tilt of the Earth, but it's on very long time scales. So we're not talking about things that happen from year to year or even decade to decade. Those are things that are very long time scales. And those are things that can't happen suddenly. I mean, as we discussed earlier in the program, all of these planetary things, you know, the tilts of the planets and their orbits and all of that, they're all very well understood and predictable far into the future. You know, they don't change suddenly because it would take too much energy to change them.
Okay, next up we go to Willow in Williams, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hi, Willow. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hi, Roy.
Hi, Willow.
I wanted to find out your take on the CO2 levels. Since I believe that our forests and our oceans have something to do with converting the CO2 levels into oxygen, and since there's so much deforestation going on and the oceans are so polluted, could that have an impact on the fact that the CO2 is rising?
Well, that's a good question. The interaction of life with CO2 is the thing that's least understood. I mean, we know that life on Earth depends upon CO2 for the start of the food chain and for photosynthesis. We've been monitoring CO2 in the atmosphere since 1958 on Mauna Loa, and it has been steadily going up. What we see, we can explain that most easily based on the emissions of CO2 by humans, you know, burning fossil fuels. And the reason why we're fairly confident that that's what's causing the rise is because the CO2 is only rising at half the rate that we're putting extra CO2 into the atmosphere. And that's because nature loves more CO2. No matter how much more we put in each year, nature takes out half of it. And the way I like to phrase it is that nature is sucking on the atmosphere as hard as it can and has basically taken out most of the CO2. And as we add more to the atmosphere, nature is able to breathe more freely. Now, you ask, you know, ocean pollution, things like that, deforestation. Globally, deforestation has basically stopped. In fact, there's, if anything, there's been a greening of the Earth. We've seen in NASA satellite data in recent decades. We think some of this greening is due to more CO2 into the being added to the atmosphere. So there's a lot of different factors here, and some of them are not well understood. El Nino and La Nina have a big effect when they occur on atmospheric CO2. Also, some of these major forest fires seem to show up a little bit in the CO2 record because they burn a huge amount of fuel. But those are about the only things that we can actually see in our measurements of CO2 changes in the atmosphere.
Next up, we go to Steve in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Steve, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hello. The climate change argument, the bottom line of it was to tax our energy, to take that money through the United Nations and redistribute it to the third world nations to build them up, to equalize the whole world, I guess.
Well, yeah, there is some truth to that, Steve. And, you know, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's part of the UN's Agenda 21, which has been out there for many years now. You know, these are things that they would like to accomplish, and taxing energy use, taxing the production of CO2, is something that the CO2 or that the UN would like to see organized under them, you know, rather than under specific nations. And that's why the United Nations is the head of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which has all of these scientists from around the world working on man-made global warming theory. You know, it's all orchestrated by the UN, and I don't want to make it sound like any kind of conspiracy, because it's not a secret.
And they're all getting paid for it, aren't they?
Well, yeah, yeah, of course. You know, and that's one of the annoying things about all of this, is that the UN has these huge meetings every year, and they're in exotic locations, and they eat the finest food, and they're all trying to decide how the rest of humanity should sacrifice. And that really bothers me, because we know if there's one thing that's a danger to human health and welfare, it's poverty. And I'm a big believer that you alleviate poverty through freedom, not through redistribution of wealth.
Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee. Ariel is with us, east of the Rockies. Good morning.
Morning. How you doing?
Good.
Good, good. This is my second time calling, and I just want to give my opinion about the global warming.
Okay.
I know for a fact that, you know, the weather is controlled nowadays. Every single day here through Nashville, I see all the chemtrail planes going through every single day. And now if they don't go through, you know, like, we don't get no rain, it gets extremely hot. And I know you guys were talking about the Mars before, and I believe that if this situation keeps going the way it is, I think we're going to end up like Mars.
Well,
like
that was something. Yeah, I thought about that last night, Ariel, exactly, as we were looking at pictures. Something happened drastically, Roy, to Mars. I sure hope it doesn't happen here.
Yeah, well, I'm not worried about it. Maybe I'm naive, but I'm not worried about it. I think we're talking about very long timescales over which I don't think we can worry about or have any control over. What's interesting is that the Martian atmosphere is almost 100% carbon dioxide. And then, you know, here on Earth, where there's lots of life, very little carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, even though it's required for life to exist. And that's why I say, you know, life is sucking on the atmosphere as hard as it can to get as much carbon dioxide as it can. Now, the caller's point about chemtrails and all of that, I personally don't believe that there is such a thing as chemtrails. Everyone has seen clouds of different colors. The condensation trails that come out of jet aircraft that you see, you know, in the sky, those are basically ice clouds, and they will take on all of the different colors depending on atmospheric conditions that clouds do, you know, especially at sunrise and sunset.
There have been strange elements, though, that have come down, barium, aluminum, in higher numbers that they found.
Well, I don't know anything about that, except that I would think that, you know, when you've got jet turbines, you know, with metal in contact with burning gases, you know, spinning at thousands of RPM, that there's got to be some sort of erosion of the metal material out of those jet engines. So, yeah, I don't know the facts of what you're talking about, but, you know, we do pollute to some extent. The question is it anything that we need to be worried about, and is it anything that is actually being done to try to hurt the public?
If we can seed clouds, Roy, and make it rain, why aren't they doing that in the Midwest?
Well, this is something that was researched a lot back in the 1950s and 60s, was cloud seeding, because drought was a problem.
Sure.
And basically what they found was that you really can't make it rain unless a cloud is almost ready to rain anyway, okay? And then if you do, you can only treat one or two clouds because each cloud is huge. You know, it's really hard to impact them in any way. So it's sort of like it's you can't fool Mother Nature. It's hard to fool Mother Nature. You just can't do enough to clouds to cause them to rain if they're not already on the verge of raining anyway. And that the same thing happened with trying to seed hurricanes. That was another Project Storm Fury, yeah, where they tried
to stop them, slow them down.
Tried to weaken the hurricanes, and they found that it just wasn't possible.
Let's go to San Bernardino. Kathy's up, first-time caller. Kathy, you're up.
Oh, hi. It's my first time calling. I have just one question for your guest,
sure.
But to you, George, I wanted to say that you were saying the Earth is alive?
I think the Earth is alive,
like a living
organism.
Yes, I agree. I think it is. And that it's trying to cure itself by removing us, which is destroying it. So
we need to talk it out of that.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, but not
maybe too late
so much. But anyway, I have just one question for Roy.
Sure. And
a couple of others, if he's willing to answer this one. What if you're wrong?
What if he's wrong about non-man-made?
And they're right. And we are causing. And if we just cut back, we won't destroy ourselves.
Well, let me put it this way.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What
Go ahead.
What if they are wrong? You see, poverty, we know, kills people. And everything that humans do requires energy. And we need low-cost, abundant sources of energy in order to lift people out of poverty. Now, as we rely increasingly on more expensive forms of energy, that hurts the economy, and it's the poor people that are hurt the most.
Let's come back and finish this question, Roy, when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Ronald Kessler joins us as we talk about the secrets of the FBI with this split program. And when we come back in a moment with Dr. Roy Spencer, we'll take your final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Roy, I think also one of the big problems, of course, will be the lack of drinking water one day. What happens when those things start to go?
Well, globally, they already have gone.
Yeah.
I mean, we've never been in a good position globally for clean drinking water. And in fact, you know, when they've gotten environmentalists and economists together to say, listen, what can we do for a certain amount of money that helps humans and the environment the most? Well, certainly the thing that can be done for the least amount of money that helps humans the most is provide clean drinking water, because that's the cheapest thing to do. And this brings us back to the issue of poverty. Poverty is really what destroys the environment. I mean, you go to poor countries and all of the trees have been cut down for you know, firewood, for cooking fires. The people don't live very long, so not only is nature harmed, but humans are harmed as well. So that's why I'm a big fan of economic growth, which also will solve the CO2 problem to the extent that it's a problem. The previous caller before the break asked, you know, what if I'm wrong? And I frequently get that question. And it could be that I am wrong, that, that global warming will be a serious problem in the future that we have to address. But the way we're going about it now is not the way to address it. You can't address it by cutting back CO2 use by 10%. You have to find some new major source of energy that is inexpensive. And we don't have that right now. We don't have anything that's deployable on a large scale. Wind won't do it. Solar won't do it. The energy demand by humanity is simply too large. So if you want to help people, help economies to grow. And then, you know, the R&D dollars that we get through that wealth generation can be put into finding other solutions.
Okay, back to the calls we go. Kathy, of course, let's get you back in San Bernardino. First time caller there with us. Go ahead, Kath.
Thank you. I was just going to hang up.
Yeah, you were done with me. Nah, the break got you. So go ahead.
Okay. Well, what he's saying is true. I mean, some people will be hurt. But if he's wrong, the human race is going to go the way of the dinosaur. If the other people are wrong, the businesses that are, the big conglomerates, are going to lose money because other businesses that are trying to get a hold are into the economy are going to be destroyed because the big guys don't want them around because they're going to lose money. And we all know that corporations, for the most part, are greedy and don't really care about too much except for the profit, which is because everybody wants the
profit. And Roy, you were saying, what if they're wrong, not you?
Yeah, well, you know, Kathy has a view that's quite common, and I would ask, okay, what would you do to fix the problem?
Okay, they have ideas like you were saying that people need inexpensive energy, which is true. Well, they have come up, I've seen, small wind turbines that you could put on a building or a house, not those big farms that they have, which just help the electric company, not people. If they were to give grants or help those people that have come up with the idea of making small turbines that are short, sort of like the shape of a can and or a kite that is round, and put it on individual buildings, everybody wouldn't need the grid anymore. We would have our own energy generated by wind.
Yeah, it just is. When you look at the numbers, it doesn't work. You cannot get enough energy out of the wind to satisfy our demand for electricity. You know,
yes, that's true, but I'm saying not here in the United States or the Western world. I'm talking about the other countries that don't have computers and five TVs and vacuum cleaners and air conditioners and dishwashers and washing machines.
Well, to the extent that they use natural sources such as, you know, localized solar collectors or, let's say, wind, which is, you know, intermittent because you have to have the wind blow, the amount of energy they're going to have available to them, to themselves, is very small. It's not going to be anything like what we have. So you're going to be perpetuating poverty. And that's the way I see it.
Okay, let's take a few more calls here. We'll go to Ernie in Cresco, Iowa. On the wild card line. Ernie, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Interestingly enough, I did oceanographic research work for the Navy for 25 years. I spent about 95% of that time aboard many different research ships, and I spent 18 months at the South Pole on an ice core drilling team. Now, one mistake that all these people who are hollering and preaching man-made global warming, one mistake they're all making is they are not going back in time far enough to look at the records. If you would, what we did with this ice core was, it's like looking at the rings of a tree. Every layer for every season or every year at the pole is a different color. It's just like looking at the, when you cut down a tree and you look at the stump, you can see all these rings, you know, where the different years were. And we used to take a sample of each one of those, and one of the things we did was check it for CO2. And it was very interesting. When we got back about 600 million years ago, we found out that the CO2 on Earth was over 20 times more than it is today. So what I'd like to know is, what man was responsible for that CO2?
Well, that's often pointed out.
That's the point.
There does seem to be a disconnect between CO2 theory and what they think happened millions of years ago when there was much more CO2 in the atmosphere, but it wasn't that much warmer. Now, as far as the ice cores go, the ice cores are used quite a bit as sort of a rallying point around CO2 theory, because over the time scales that are in the Vostok ice core, which is hundreds of thousands of years, they see that CO2 and temperature go up and down together. And this has been like their major piece of evidence. It was in Al Gore's movie, An Inconvenient Truth. He thought it was so important, he made this huge prop that he put up on a stage to show the relationship of CO2 and temperature going up and down, up and down. Now, the problem with all of that, as far as supporting global warming theory, is that they find that the CO2 follows the temperature rather than the temperature following the CO2 changes. So there's always been this issue of, well, maybe something else was causing the temperature to change, which then caused biological changes on the Earth, you know, the amount of life there is, which then caused CO2 in the atmosphere to change. So once again, we bump up against this problem of cause versus effect. If you interpret the ice cores one way, you, like Jim Hansen does, for instance, he relies on the ice cores. He interprets it in such a way that supports catastrophic global warming theory. But if you interpret it another way, you can interpret it as, you know, that there isn't going to be catastrophic global warming because those temperature changes cause the CO2, not the other way around, which is what we're doing now. We're adding CO2 to the atmosphere, and supposedly that's going to cause the temperature to change.
In college, kids that are taking up meteorology, I wonder what percent of them believe in the man-made global warming theory as opposed to the cycle? What do you think, Roy?
I find that students are pretty open to the idea that humans aren't mostly responsible for global warming. And when I talk to students, I encourage them, you know, to use their brains and to look at both sides of the issue. And I give them both sides of the argument. The trouble is that all of the research dollars go into research that supports global warming theory. So that if they want to get into climate research, they basically have to play along. You know, they have to play the game. And that's why, excuse me, that's why you don't hear very many skeptics who are young. You only hear us old guys who have been established in our careers long enough to where we can afford to speak out and not run such a big risk of losing our funding.
Okay, back to the phones we go. We go to Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Josh is with us. Josh, take it away.
Hi, George. Great to be on your show.
Thanks, Josh.
I'm here in Wisconsin in the North Woods in the heart of the drought and the heat wave. I just want to impart a little education to your audience. And I think that this is a problem we can think our way out of. I think if we use our brains and we try adapting a little more to variations in climatic weather, that we may be able to beat this and live longer, more healthier lives.
All right, that's a good point.
Well, there's no question that humans have great ingenuity and solve problems as they arise. And I think, you know, that's where I think the market, the freedom that people have to come up with good ideas for solving our problems and be rewarded for it, I think that's how humans, yeah, that's how we've gotten to the point where, you know, human longevity is double what it was 100 years ago. So on that point, I agree, you know, that humans, you know, we can figure our way out of this. The question is that going to be done by government mandate, or is it going to be done because the need for energy is so great that companies or individuals or whoever stand to make a lot of money if they can just come up with some good ideas of how to produce energy fairly cheaply without producing CO2 at the same time.
Let's go to Scott in San Diego, California. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I want to explain the fundamental scientific error with the IPCC's global warming viewpoint, and that is that they take an 11-year linear average of the solar output, which varies enormously in period and amplitude from one solar cycle to the next, instead of using the heat exchange with the heat capacity of the global oceans. And this is so fundamental, that's the only second-order effect in the whole system, and it's completely omitted from their climate models. And you cannot get a bachelor science degree in this country, at least in the hard science or engineering, without taking physics or chemistry, both of which cover the concept of heat capacity. And this is just, the man-made global warming is just utter fraud from a scientific perspective.
Well, what Scott's talking about, I think you're partly right, and there is a recent paper that came out on this subject. First, excuse me.
Sure.
The climate models that they run do take into account heat capacity. You have to. You can't compute a temperature change of something without including heat capacity, right? Otherwise, you don't know how much the temperature is going to change. But what I agree with you on is that they make an assumption that the sun has been putting out the same amount of energy, for hundreds of years and really hasn't varied hardly at all. But what if the period over which that we've had actual measurements of solar output, which is since we've had satellites, like about the last 30 years, what if that period of time is actually a period of elevated solar output? Because we really don't know for sure whether the solar output has been elevated compared to, 100 years ago. And what the caller's talking about is true, is, temperature change is related to heat capacity. If you start putting more energy in than's coming out, the temperature will go up, but only, in proportion to, inversely proportional to the heat capacity. You can heat up a bathtub full of air much easier than you can heat up a bathtub full of water. So there's a time lag involved. And the climate models take all of that into account. What they don't take into account is these potential natural sources of warming or cooling that can occur.
We have Don truck driving in New York. Go ahead, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Couple things here. I'm not too sure if they have something to do with each other, but it goes back to one, the weather control, and two, the stuff falling from the sky. Now, I'm from Western New York, Buffalo area, and about a year ago, maybe less than a year ago, there were cases. This was more than one town. Also, cases of pink slime that was found on the rooftops of houses.
Right.
First the media or the government or whoever was talking about it or covering it up or whatever. First they said it was bird droppings, and nobody believed that. So I wanted to ask, I heard you've been about aluminum, maybe from planes. What would that be? I mean, pink slime, it seems like some kind of chemical.
I don't know. Pink slime from the sky. I haven't heard of that, and I can't even imagine what would have caused that.
Yeah, that did happen a few years ago. I remember a story about that. It's kind of baffling.
Occasionally there are ice falls from the sky, which I believe are, like out of a clear blue sky, huge chunks of ice falling out. And I think in every case, those are due to water leaks on aircraft, because the water systems in aircraft are pretty leaky. And, you get ice buildup. They're flying up there where it's way below the freezing point of water. And ice can build up and fall off, and then, these chunks of ice come crashing through somebody's home or, onto the street in front of you.
That does happen. And if it's blue, we know exactly where it came
from. Yeah, that's right.
Let's go to Kathy in Agawam, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi, good morning to both of you.
You too.
Listen, I live not too far from Westover Air Force Base up here in Western Mass, And for the last 2 years, we had these planes, four or five at a time, going right across our area in a checkerboard pattern. Now, these aren't flyovers. These are checkerboard patterns. So that means that they're crisscrossing and they're going every which way. And I'd like to say, after the chemtrails or whatever you call the exhaust fumes or whatever those are that go out of the back of the plane, they go for miles, and when they start dispersing, you will smell a metallic, almost a metallic taste in your mouth and smell something in the air that's metallic. So I don't know what they're spraying, but Dr. Spencer, I think you're wrong. I think they're spraying something. They don't do checkerboard patterns of four or five planes for just, these aren't flyovers. These are flyovers back and forth and crisscrossing each other.
Well, the fact that the planes fly in different directions and then the contrails make a checkerboard pattern, I don't see any conspiracy in that. I don't see why, you know, that would be something sinister.
We've done a lot of shows, Roy, but, you know, a lot of guests have done some homework and, you know,
I know there's a lot of chemtrail people out there.
Yeah, something's going on, whatever it may be. You know, there's just, and yes, most of it is jet fumes, the vapor trails. There's no doubt about that as well. Roy, we're almost out of time. Give us your website, sir.
Well, I've actually got a few. As you've already mentioned, drroyspencer.com. I also have weatherquestions.com because people have a lot of weather questions. That's a pretty popular site. And I also have weatherstreet.com, which is a regular weather website.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Roy. Dr. Roy Spencer, up next, we're going to talk about the secrets of the FBI with Ronald Kessler. It's an amazing story. All kinds of things coming up next on Coast to Coast AM.